a tragedy today.
I'd like to take a moment to tell all my Fairbanks friends traveling to Anchorage about Days Inn Hotel. They're located at 321 East 5th Avenue, 5th and Cordova Street, Anchorage, Alaska. Whether you're traveling for business or pleasure, at the Days Inn Anchorage, you can expect personal service, quality accommodations, and affordable rates. The downtown Anchorage Days Inn Hotel offers 116 rooms, each decorated with furnishings and amenities you expect from the expensive lodging chains. With its convenient location, quality accommodations, and friendly staff, there is no better lodging choice in the city. That's Days Inn Hotel, located at 321 East 5th Avenue. That's 5th and Cordova Street, Anchorage, Alaska. If you'd like to give them a call for reservations, the number is 907-276-7226. Or you might want to use their toll-free 800 number. That's 800-325-2525.
By now, you've probably heard of University Resume Service Alaska. Hi, I'm Phil Deischer, owner of University Resume. University Resume Service has been producing custom resumes in Fairbanks for 8 years. We are a professional writing business, and we have helped literally hundreds of people from every trade and profession sell themselves on paper. Professional writing is more than just typing. Indeed, professional writing is a unique skill, the way every profession is unique. Professional writing applied to your resume can give you the edge in landing the interview, which could lead to the job you want. A resume, which has numerous uses, usually takes about 2 hours to write. No more struggling over how to sell yourself on paper. In 2 hours or less, University Resume can have you armed with a custom resume and seeking the job you need for the career you want. For any kind of career writing, from resumes to loan applications, federal form SF-171 federal and state applications, call University Resume Service Alaska at 479-5747. For all types of professional writing, we're in the yellow pages under resumes.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, mining, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska, or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Got a couple of public service announcements for you this afternoon, folks. First of all, there's a fundraiser for Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Agency, and that's they'll be having this fundraiser on Friday, February 10th, 1989, from 8 p.m. to 12 a.m. At the Westmark Hotel Gold Room. And they are looking for donations. So become a friend of FCA. And that's a message from my friend Tim Sanders over there at the Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Center. In addition to that, we have a placer evaluation workshop coming up through the Mining Extension Program at the University of Alaska here in Fairbanks. And the workshop is designed to provide those interested in placer mining with a systematic approach to the prospecting, exploration, and evaluation of a placer property. That class will run all day Saturday, January 21st, And Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, January 23rd, 24th, and 25th, it will be held in the evening times from 7 to 10 p.m. So if you're interested in that particular class, you can give us a call at 474-7702 or 456-2569. Now we're going to do what we do generally at this time on Alaska Gold Trails, and you know what that is. We're going to have our contest. And today, the prize for this particular contest is going to be a 1 ounce, 1 troy ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining. And you know where Oxford Assaying and Refining is. It's at 208 Wendell Street. And they have also, they have a quote line over there where you can obtain the prices of gold, silver, and platinum. And that's their straight information number. It's 452-7858. And if you'd like other types of information, you can call their office phone, which is 456-3967. And today's contest, of course, is going to dwell around one of our sponsors here in the Fairbanks area, one of the manufacturers of materials that we use here in interior Alaska in the gold mining industry. And those people are located at the phone number 488-6432. And if you are the third person that will call me and tell me who they are, where they're located, and a whole lot about what they do, you'll win a 1 ounce silver ingot from Oxford Assaying and Refining there at 208 Wendell Street. So we're looking for some phone calls on who those folks are located at 488-6432 in an effort to win that silver ingot. So give us a call here. I'll take the third person. And I'll tell you what, just so that the first two people that call and tell me who they are, I will see that they get a crystalline geode from Alaska Prospectors, located at 504 College Road, right here in Fairbanks, Alaska. So give us a call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. That sponsor is Hector.
That's right. You're the first caller. And so what you've done is you've won a crystalline geode from Alaskan Prospectors. And if you'll just give me your name, you can pop over there and pick the geode up. And they'll be waiting for you. And by the way, their hours now, their winter hours, are from 9:30 till 5 o'clock on Monday, Friday, and Saturdays. And can I have your first name?
Katie.
Okay, Katie. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, Hector's Welding out on the Richardson Highway.
Great. You're the second caller. And once again, you've won a crystallized geode from Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road.
Okay.
And can I have your first name?
Terry? Terry.
Oh, okay. Jerry.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Jerry, thanks so much for playing the contest here on Alaska Gold Trails.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hi, you're on the air. You're the third caller, my friend.
Okay, that's Hector's Welding.
That's Hector's Welding. You better be ready to tell me all about it.
13.5 mile Richardson Highway.
By golly, you got that part down.
Manufacturers of multi-channel sluice boxes, custom welding, build any piece of equipment you just about want. Just weld it.
And
been in Alaska longer than Alaska, almost.
Is that right? You know, along the lines of all those kinds of equipment, they also do loader repairs, heavy equipment repairs, truck repairs in a welding fashion. And they also have an interesting product line over there called gel logs, which are flocculants used in the placer mining industry, and that you can get a test kit, if you'd like, by just dropping over at Hector's and picking that up. And it's free.
You're going to have to do that, aren't
you? Yeah. Well, you can if you'd like, if you have that need. And it's certainly the price is right, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Okay, so one little comment on that. Hector's always likes to have a say wherever Alaska miners are working. Hector's is the first name in gold recovery equipment. And they're located, like you said, at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Their phone number is what? What was their phone number?
Phone number was 488-6432.
488-6432. Thank you so much for all the information. I'm sure Hector appreciates that. And by the way, if you'll give me your name, I'll put it on this slip of paper, and you can come up here to Washington Plaza at the KFAR studio and pick up this slip, and that will entitle you to a 1 troy ounce silver ingot at Oxford.
Okay, it's Sam.
Sam?
G.
Sam, just G?
G is the last name, or the last initial.
Okay, very good, Sam. Okay. Thanks so much for participating.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Well, that's our contest for today. Last week I informed the public that Urban Rahoy would be in with us. Unfortunately, Urban couldn't be with us today. Del Ackles is with us. He's going to give us some information regarding where he came from and what he does here in Alaska, and tell us some of the placer mining activities that have been going on. And right at the moment, I want to say welcome, Del Ackles, to Alaska Gold Trails.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's real nice being here on this cool afternoon.
It's certainly that, isn't it?
It's also nice being up here on the second floor so we can see the sun.
That's right, just above the mist. Say, Del, give us a little background on where you came from.
Well, how far back you want to go?
Well, how about from the beginning?
From the beginning? Well, that's a long way back. I came to Alaska in the early 60s and basically came up in the military and stayed and then went back and finished school and then came back with RCA for a while, and after that got into mining. So mining actually started for us in about 1965, and it became our livelihood in about 1974.
It took a little time to get things squared away so that you could get heavily involved in the mining industry.
Well, not alone that, at $32 an ounce, there wasn't that much motivation at that time.
I see, right. And in 1974, the price changed, did it?
Well, actually, it's changed in 72, and that started the program. And we were lucky enough to have drill logs on the property that we ended up owning, and they were produced by an old-time company here in Fairbanks, which was the FE company, and they were very reliable. So from that point, we made the decision if we were going to change our livelihoods and change our lifestyle. And it was a very interesting move for us, and probably one of the better moves I've ever made in my life. So we really enjoyed it.
It's a comfortable lifestyle for you then, huh?
Well, it's
in some ways.
It has its ups and downs, Jim, but there's still an independence there and a type of lifestyle that is very, very enjoyable.
Uh-huh. Well, tell us a little bit about the lifestyle and some of the characteristics that center around the placer mining industry and a placer miner, some of the things that they might enjoy. And by the way, while we're traveling along with these questions here, I'd like to remind the listening audience that if they'd like to phone in and ask you a few questions about placer mining or anything else associated with the mining industry here in Alaska, that our phone number here is 479-8255. So give us a call here, and we'll be happy to attempt to answer your questions at any rate. Okay, Del, give us give us the atmosphere, the flavor of a mining camp.
Well, that's a very varied flavor, Jim. You've got camps that are family operations from two people to 10 people, And of course, you have your larger companies, too, all the way up to the Bema Dredge, which are large offshore operations. Basically, most of the placer mining in the state here, and especially 10 or 15 years ago, were mostly small mom-pop type operations. And there was an independent atmosphere that went along with that. So when we got started, we were very small. And unfortunately, at that time, we didn't really have to worry about any particular income being derived from the mining. So we had an enjoyable start. It was low-keyed, and then we worked into it from there. But after about 3 years of having no income, it became evident that we had to do something. So from there, we got a little more serious about it. And over the years, we've developed some fairly efficient mining techniques and some fairly innovative technology in this particular field, and it's really, really been a challenge and been an interesting thing for the whole family.
You spoke that all the way from the Bema down to the mom and pop operations. Let's scale it down. Let's start at the top in the largest operation that we have here in the state. You indicated it might be the Bema. Can you give us a little background on the Bema and what it's all about?
Well, the Bema Dredge originally was designed as a tin dredger, and it was in Southeast Asia. And it was moved over there by the Balaton people and Shell Oil in 1977 or 78. I was aboard that particular dredge in 79, and it was a very interesting experience not only to see that type of technology and alluvial type of mining. And what we'd experienced up to that time, Jim, is, as you well know here in this state here, the technology was basically hand-me-down old-fashioned. And we, at that time, looked at for different technology that was a little different than a sluice box gravity separation. And the jigs and the jig circuits were kind of a mystery, and so I had enough interest to go find out actually what kind of mystery this was, which turned out to be a good experience because it not only taught me that there is a lot of material or a lot of gold or a lot of values in the ground that could be possibly left with the older type of technology. So from that experience, we basically changed our particular systems. And then the Bema Dredge later on, of course, was purchased by Inspiration 3 years ago, and then it came to Alaska. And since that, the ownership has changed. Westgold now owns it, and it is the world's largest bucket dredge. It's quite an awesome sight to see that, especially if you're downtown in Nome, looking down the street, and this thing's 2 miles off the shore, and it just dwarfs the town. And but it does have a tremendous capacity, and it's almost really too big of a unit for that particular type of deposit. It was more or less built for your South Seas type of atmosphere where you're working in a little warmer environment, and you didn't have the wind problems you do up at Nome. And it's taken 2 years to actually modify that dredge to get to the point where it's getting some production. And right now they're running at about 60% of the other production, and they're still processing over 1 million cubic yards during the short season they do have up there. So it's quite impressive.
This is a bucket line type boat then?
Yeah, it's a bucket line, and it's similar to the ones you would see around Fairbanks, except that you could take the one at Chattanooga and put it crossways on the hull on the beam, and it wouldn't even overhang. So it just give you an idea of the size.
I heard one of the chaps say that if you put the Bema in the Dallas Cowboy stadium, that it would extend the full length of the football field and stick out the top of the stadium.
Well, you could put all the NFL teams in the buckets.
Is that right?
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. And what are you scaling down now? We also have some other kind of dredges working in the state, land dredges.
Yes, these type of dredges, of course, the Alaska Gold, which was the old FE company, are still is operating several dredges here in the state. Some of them have been modified, but basically the dredges are pretty much intact and about the same technology, which is still a good technology as far as dollar value as far as processing.
Some of those dredges run up around, the larger dredges around, I think the maximum that I heard was about 10,000 yards, a 24-hour shift.
Well, they'll actually go more than that. Some of them will. The Bema, they can actually produce at full capacity about 62,000 cubic yards per day, to give you an idea of the difference in size. Right now, they're currently operating at about 36 or 37,000 cubic yards in a 24-hour shift. Comparing that to the dredges that we're operating, it is true that that particular unit is producing about three times what any single dredge had produced here, you know, in past history.
Similar to the dredges that we had in the Fairbanks area.
Very similar.
Except
that the recovery technology was much different.
Let me take a moment out, and we'll hear from some of our sponsors, and we'll get back. We'll talk about some of the smaller mining operations, more typical of the family style placer mining that we know here in the interior of Alaska.
When your vehicle needs a repair, there is no substitute for a trustworthy mechanic. We encourage you to try A&L Precision 4-Wheel. At A&L Precision, quality service and low prices are not empty phrases. Owner Larry Peck is a certified master mechanic and holds a degree in automotive engineering. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. From tune-up to major overhaul, foreign and domestic vehicles, A&L Precision does it all. And if you need towing, A&L Precision has the lowest prices in town. Call 451-1995. That's A&L Precision at 451-1995. If your water could talk, would it sound like this?
You like that soap scum I left in the shower?
Sounds like you got hard water, which dries your skin and
makes soap stick to your hair.
You should call the Culligan man and get a Culligan water softener.
All my hard work down the drain.
Call your Culligan man and take care with Culligan.
Call Culligan today. Call 474-0272. That's 474-0272.
problem. You're young, you've never bought a car before, no credit. Solution, Seekins, Ford, Lincoln, Mercury.
Hey, I remember when I was young and first getting started, it was tough to get financing for a new car. No major credit, nobody wanted to finance me. Well, now we have a way for the first-time new car or truck buyer to establish credit for the rest of their lives and drive home in one of the best-built American vehicles made today and possibly do it with no down payment out of their own pocket. The cars are here, the program is simple. If it sounds good to you, what are you waiting for? See us right now, right here, at Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury. See you here.
Dell, I think we've got a caller on the line here. Let's check this. Well, we had a caller on the line. If they'd like to give us a call back, the number again here is 479-7255. Is that correct? 8255. I had to check that number.
It's cold, Jim, today.
Yeah, it's cold.
You got an excuse.
Dell, we were talking about some of the larger operations, the bucket line gold dredges and so forth. Scaling it down a bit, let's talk about some of the smaller mom-and-pop operations or even some of the larger operations that maintain a full staff here in interior Alaska. Valdez Creek has a sizable operation over there, and they're moving quite a large yardage. Maybe you'd like to comment on that a little bit.
Well, the Valdez Creek operation is kind of unique in itself. It's more of a glacial type of alluvial fan deposit that does have buried channels in it, but it is very deep, and it's not really typical to a lot of the type of mines that are typical mom-pop. They've had their problems because of their depth all the way to 240 to 250 feet. Once you get down that deep, especially with the mechanical means, you've got engineering problems that you've got to look at, bank stabilization and things like this. In the past, they did have some problems with some recoveries, and they have now, Jim, installed a jig processing unit that is now handling most of the recoveries, and basically it's very similar to what the Bema Dredge has, mm-hmm. and it's been very, very successful. So because of that, they've improved their recoveries down there, but still, like I say, that's not a typical operation. Most of the typical operations are more shallower. One thing I got to say, when we got involved in this particular livelihood, I guess you would call it, that there wasn't really too much information base out there at that time. This type of industry had been at a very low because of the fact that the price of gold was very low, and it was held that way since the price of gold was fixed by the federal government. But the war also had a lot to do with it, and it shut down this industry basically during that war period. So when it did start again, unfortunately, the information base that was priorly, you know, that was available prior to that particular time was not really available. And if it wasn't for the University of Alaska and Mining Extension and some of these other programs, there would have still been a lot of people out there that would have really had some tough time. Mm-hmm. Not only trying to figure out what to do, but on how to do it. And there's been a lot of things that's happened since then, and especially during the 70s. We've had the Clean Water Act, and we've had NEPA and FLTMA and some of these other environmental acts that has really changed the direction where this industry is going to go in the future and where it has gone in the past. And without this particular type of knowledge base, it almost makes it impossible, at least at this time, for somebody to jump in and say, hey, I've got some equipment, I'm going to go mining. It's just not that easy. It's becoming a very high-tech type of an industry anymore, and it has to be, because there are some concerns over the environmental concerns, the water quality, and reclamation, and various other things that are now coming into this particular industry that are redriving the price up to the point where you really have to look at it very seriously before you get involved with it.
You first started mining back in the 60s. What was the type of equipment that you used in your mom-and-pop operation in the initial stages?
Well, that was two kids, a pick and a shovel, and and a little farm tractor. No, it wasn't that bad. But the technology then was very basic to what we had in the past. It was a straight-channel sluice box, which since then we have found that was not really that efficient. And a lot of it was actually by hand, one piece of equipment at that time. And if the kids weren't out there trying to figure out where the water was going, or if my wife wasn't out there trying to pick nuggets up, if she could find them. I can remember when she found the first one, she You thought that she had discovered a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
She went screaming around. I thought she was hurt. She had this little tiny nugget in her hand. And I got off the tractor, went over and checked on her to make sure that she wasn't bleeding in here. When she showed me this little nugget, I shook my head and went back. But that's what it was about. And, there's a lot of fun times that goes
sure.
with this.
Sure.
But since then, like I say, we've developed into a very sophisticated operation.
Uh-huh. I followed your changes as you've gone through the years up to your more polished three-stage jig system and all. But what about some of these other operators that are currently mining? They're mining using caps, loaders, different kinds of processing equipment. Most of them are still using the sluice boxes and the multiple channel sluice boxes like Hector's prepares. In fact, as you see, Hector's boxes all over the country being used to extract the gold. Compare perhaps the sizes from, you spoke briefly about Valdez Creek on down. What sizes are we talking about in these multiple channel sluice box operations, which are family oriented?
Well, on the average, the best way to put a size to it, on your average family operations, you're right around probably 75 to 100 cubic yards an hour of processed material. There has been some changes, and the standard old triple channel sluice boxes with the innovations that's been put in for fine gold saving still are probably your cheapest, best bet yet for a recovery system. And in most cases, work quite well. If you're not in an area where you have high concentrates other than gold, like it might be magnetite or ilmenite or other heavy minerals, or your sulfides or something like this, where you'd have recovery problems, then you might have to change your technology. But basically, a sluice box, a simple sluice box, or not a simple sluice box, but a sluice box system that has been modified, that has good prior screening to it, is efficient enough now to where the water use is down to the point where they not alone can get decent separation, but they can achieve good water quality too.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to note that Once the importance of the pre-sizing of the material prior to entering the sluicing system, in that by pre-sizing that there are higher recovery rates in the sluicing system, especially when the concentrate, for example, magnetite, ilmenite, like you spoke of, is very low. I think one of the things that you found, and a lot of the miners have found, that if they're in an area where there is a lot of heavy material, that the ripples within the sluicing system becomes packed, and of course that lowers the efficiency of the total system. Did you have the concept of the jigs that you recently went over to Malaysia to look at? That was back in 1982, if I'm not mistaken. What did you find over there? Was there a difference? What kind of mom-and-pop operations do they have over there, or do they have mom-and-pop operations over there on land?
Oh, yeah, that was probably a very, very interesting experience. Yes, they do. That basically, most of those operations are called mom-and-pop operations. They're called pirate dredgers. But basically, a lot of that, it's offshore. There is some onshore mining in Malaysia, and the technology isn't that much different, basically, than what it is here, except that their sluice box systems, being as basic as they were here, let's say 15 or 20 years ago, are very, very large. They have to be large because of the type of product they were going after. They're not going after gold and silver, which is a very heavy mineral with a specific gravity about 19. The tin, being so much lighter, with about the same weight as your magnetite, specific gravity of 6.9 to 7, becomes something that is very, very difficult to catch with any type of a gravity separation device, especially if it's very fine. And most of the tin there is very fine stuff, about the consistency of sugar and finer. And to be able to recover something like that, it takes sluice boxes that were really amazing. And some of these sluice boxes covered as much as 2 acres in size, and not just 10 or 12 channels, but hundreds of channels. And to give an idea, basically why we were looking at that technology, because the jigs actually was a revolutionary step in the tin recovery, especially for the worldwide production of tin. And it was kind of an eye opener because we were bored. We were in a dugout with a little Briggs & Stratton long shaft type of canoe going out through these small, independent, family-operated dredging or barges that were floating out there.
Mm-hmm. That was just off the shore?
We were about a mile and a half off the shore, and it was very shallow. Mm-hmm. And this was in the Gulf of Tonkin, and it was a really, really kind of a amazing array of different recoveries. And the thing that really amazed me, Jim, was the fact that these sluice boxes, most of them were up to 300 to 400 feet long on barges and 2-3 channels, and they were using, believe it or not, AstroTurf and expanded screen, which I don't know if that was Alaska's influence at that time in Southeast Asia or vice versa. But I was watching this one person. There was two people that owned this outfit, and they had about a 6 or 8 inch suction line, and they go down on the bottom and suck up the bottom of the deposit there, which was in the salt water offshore, and it would go through this long 300 some foot box, and at the end of this box was another little tiny barge that somebody had built a homemade jig, and it was a very simple homemade jig, and he was actually just catching the stuff this box was passing.
Hi.
And we got to talking to these people, and it was very interesting. And it comes to find out that what was happening on that particular operation was that the guy that set up that jig made a deal with these other two guys that he'd split half of what he got. And what ended up being the truth to that was the sluice box was catching one-third of the product. He was catching two-thirds, and then he was splitting half that, and he was happy. He didn't have to do any of the work.
I'll be darned.
But it was an eye-opener for me to show that, yes, there is a technology out there that was far more advanced or had a far bigger potential than what we had faced. Again, this would really apply to a deposit here in Alaska if it was extremely fine gold, especially gold below 50 mesh, all the way down to 200 or 300 mesh, which would be this consistency of powdered sugar. That's the type of gold you would miss with a sluice box.
Mm-hmm. And when you went out, from those smaller operations, you went out to some of the boats that were similar to the Bema then. And is that the first time that you observed the large-scale jigging operations, the IHC circular jigs or trapezoidal jigs, as they're sometimes called?
Yeah, well, manufacturers at that time, we weren't particularly looking at any particular manufacturer, but the thing that kept popping up, it didn't matter who built the dredge. And believe it or not, there was dredges over in Southeast Asia that were that operated both in Canada and Alaska here in the early 1900s up to the 1920s that are still in operation over there. Most of them have been modified, though, and the ones that were modified, or they didn't have sluice box systems, did have jig systems in them. Yes, so there was a lot of them that were modified, so that was our turning point. That's when we decided to look at that technology. IHC, being a manufacturer that built, was one of the world's largest builders, or still is the world's largest builder of dredgers in the world. Again, they built the Bema dredge. That name kept popping up, so that's why we had selected that particular manufacturer, for the fact that they had the expertise and they had the years mm-hmm. behind them.
Look, I want to come back, talk a little bit more about our mining industry here in Alaska right after a couple of messages from some of the people that sponsor Alaska Gold Trails. First of all, folks, I'd like to talk a little bit about our friends Gabe and Kathy out at Gabe's Truck and Auto. I think perhaps I should talk about my own vehicle a little bit here. It was having somewhat of a heart failure here a couple of weeks ago, and I took it over to Gabe's Truck and Auto, and of course they took a look at the engine and made some polishing steps on it and brought it back into good health. And I'd like to point out that in addition to the engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. They have, of course, new and rebuilt engines, which come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. So keep that in mind. And you might also keep in mind that Gabe is a one-stop service center. And if you need that IM inspections, Gabe's is one of the people who originated the no-pass, no-pay policy right here in Fairbanks, Alaska. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. And, by the way, don't forget about Gabe's towing service. He's got three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow as easy as calling 456-6156. So you might want to write that number down like I do and put it in your glove box in case of an emergency. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field, exactly 2058 Donald Road. That's their address. right out by Metro Field off of Van Horn. Or you can give them a call at 456-6156. That's Gabe's Truck and Auto. If you drop out there, tell them you heard about their business from Alaska Gold Trails. And one other sponsor that I want to just touch on just for a little minute, and that's Oxford Assaying and Refining. And then we'll get right back to telephone calls and Del Ackles. And the important thing that I want to talk about, say about Oxford Assaying and Refining, is that they are the people who buy the gold for the placer miners here in Fairbanks, Alaska. And they also have a... they are well known as your precious metal people. They're located at 208 Wendell Street, and their phone number is 456-3967. In addition to buying gold, they sell gold, ingots, silver coins, and a variety of investment gold coins and ingots. So if you're interested in investing in gold, buying gold nuggets, ingots, or coins, give them a call. Once again, their number is 456-3967. And if you need to know the prices of gold, silver, or platinum, their quote line is 452-7858. And we're going to the phone line and see what's, if someone has a question for Del Ackles here. Hello, you're on the air.
Well, I didn't have a question for Del Ackles because I just turned the radio on. But I did have a couple statements. One is that both the ads you just got through running. One is
Oxford Assaying?
Oxford Assaying, yeah. You know, they do a great job. And, you know, if you want to go in and buy get a coin, like an ounce of silver and an ounce of gold, or maybe an ounce of platinum. I don't know about platinum, but I know about gold and silver. If you want to go in, it comes uncirculated in a little plastic holder, which is great for a collector. That's the greatest thing. Uncirculated in a little plastic holder of its own is the greatest thing there is for a collector. And maybe a lot of people don't know that, but and I really want to applaud them on that, because you can get an uncirculated ounce of silver or an uncirculated ounce of gold in a little plastic holder.
You know, I'd like to follow up on that statement, and I certainly appreciate your call. I give those as Christmas and birthday gifts quite commonly, and they're not all that expensive, but they certainly have an appeal to the receiver. Have you done that kind of thing, given them as gifts?
No, I got one from when I called in on Gold Trails once before. I got one from KFAR,
uh-huh.
and that was when I became aware of the fact that you could get them in the uncirculated in the plastic container.
Uh-huh.
And I will, when I get a little bit more money, I will follow up on it, because I am a collector and I do collect coins, and I do appreciate it very much when they come in a little plastic holder, because you know, that means that people can look at it and they don't get their fingerprints all over the coin, which, you know, which I don't like at all. You know,
there's another...
Years ago, I found a silver dollar. It was an uncirculated silver dollar. Had been in a plastic container, but the plastic container was broke, and my brother-in-law wanted to see it, so I showed it to him, and he immediately, you know, it had not had a fingerprint at all on it, except on the edges, and he immediately jammed his finger into the... Of course, it's no longer uncirculated once that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it takes to ruin a coin, is somebody's fingerprint on the face of it. And so I really appreciate the fact that it doesn't have, you know, it comes in a little plastic holder, and people can look at it, but they can't get their hands on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the old days, the silverware, which was really silverware, we were always careful that we didn't put the silverware in the egg salad, because the sulfur in the egg salad would turn the silver black. And then we had to sit around with the polishing claws for a while for Mom and could polish all the silver again. So that's why they keep those in plastic containers, so the sulfur doesn't come in contact with the silver and turn it black. That was kind of interesting. That's one of the first things I learned about precious metals, is keep it away from the egg salad. Look, I certainly appreciate your call, sir, and thanks for helping me out here on Alaska Gold Trails. You've been a benefit to not only Oxford Assaying and Refining, but you also put in a plug for our show here, and thanks so much.
All right. I'll take my other, because I didn't realize this was the Gold Trails, and my other deal I will take up at a later date.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Dell, where were we here?
Number one, I think you should use a gold spoon in your salad. That wouldn't happen.
Keep the Alaska gold industry alive, huh? Inert gold. You bet. We were speaking briefly about the Malaysian deposits, and that's where you did your investigation concerning the replacement of your triple channel sluice box with the jig system. Is that right?
Yeah, well, there were several reasons why we did this, Jim, and basically it was because of the changing regulations that this industry was facing. It became quite evident very quickly that since they were changing so quickly, and we never, from year to year, really didn't know where we would be at as far as water quality or what was required or what would be required from us, it became very evident that we had to do something. And in the conditions, or at least in the site-specific area that we were in, we had other problems in that particular area that a lot of other mines wouldn't have, and high colloidal silts and lust and this type of material had become very, very difficult material to handle as far as to have it settle out or to have it be returned to the environment in a condition to where it was acceptable. For the listeners that don't really understand or gets very confused when they hear about the water quality issues here, at least in this state, basically what we have is a two-pronged deal. The Clean Water Act in 72 wanted to require that all waters within the United States be fishable and swimmable, and it was through the past governor's efforts here in this state that he made it drinkable. So from that point, there had to be a lot of changes made.
Yeah, you got a call here. Let's see what we've got. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I opened it a little late. I just wondered, I heard you talk about tin a little bit ago. What does the future hold for Lost River in that area?
Well, the Lost River deposits, most of the tin industry here in the state is basically on hold right now. And there's several areas here. Tozy Moran up in Tofty, Tin City, the areas you've mentioned, they do have a tremendous potential there, both in alluvial tin and in hard rock tin. But since tin is down now to about $2.90 to $3 a pound in a pure form, and it makes it at this point in time, not only in Alaska but in other parts of the world, almost an economic material to mine at this time. Well, we've got a surplus of tin, and tin in a lot of contexts isn't used as much as it was used in the past either, because of containers, tin cans, various other things now are made out of plastics. The reserves, when they are used up, of course, would probably boost this industry again. But at this moment, the future is on kind of a hold for the fact that the price is down. And the Southeast Asia, same thing. They had about a 70% shutdown from what they had, let's say 15 years ago. They had over 400 dredges working there in that particular area. Now they're down to just a handful.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you for the call. Dell, I want to give one more message here, a couple more messages, and we'll get right back with you and talk a little bit more about your new plant that you brought in about 1983.
Well, Jim,
thank you.
Good.
I want to talk a little bit about my friends down at B&L Pawn Shop. They're located at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. And sometimes they call it the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. And it's a little more than that. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room, they tell me. And one-stop shopping will get you everything. So just to give you an idea of some of the things that they have over there, would they have jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on and on. In fact, you can get just about anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer, keep underscore that name, Killer, you heard it on KFAR, she'll sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from me, Jim Madonna, she'll sweeten the deal even more. So if you're a little tight on money, they'll be happy to help you out. Bring in anything you feel is of value or use, and the folks at B&L will loan you the money to get through to better days. Or if you sell items on consignment, they'll work with you on that too. So if you're looking for anything from snowshoes to diamond rings, see the folks at B&L Pawn. That's 605 Gaffney, Jim, Bruce, Killer, ask Holly. They'll all be happy to deal. Killer never says no. They'll sell anything but the chandelier, and only then because it's attached. But I think if you talk to kill her the right way. She might even unhook the chandelier and sell it to you. So that's B&L Pawn Shop. They're at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their phone number is 452-6491. Open 9 to 7 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here from Jim Madonna on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal.
You're busy, and you depend on your car or truck to keep you on schedule. Russell's Texaco knows how important your vehicle is to you, so Russell's has put together one of the most complete full-service auto and truck repair centers in Fairbanks, and they're easy to find in their one great location on the corner of 12th and Noble. That's right, one great location with all of the same fast, courteous service you've grown to expect from Russell's Texaco, serving Fairbanks for over 13 years. Now, if you can't move your vehicle, don't worry. Russell's will tow your vehicle for you, and before you know it, you'll be back on the road. Just give them a call at 452-2362, 452-2362. Russell's Texaco is probably the cleanest full-service station you'll ever see in Fairbanks, and the shop is state-of-the-art with computerized diagnostic equipment and, most importantly, a competent staff who take pride in their workmanship. You depend on your vehicle, and you don't have time for delays. Russell's Texaco keeps you on schedule. Russell's Texaco full-service station, 12th and Noble.
Folks, I want to remind you that we're here with Del Ackles today, and a miner in Interior Alaska, a placer miner from Interior Alaska. And if you'd like to ask a question of Del or make a comment here on Alaska Gold Trails, our number, see if I can get it right this time, is 479-TALK. That's an easy way out. The other one is 479-8255. We're back to Del. And Del, tell us a little bit about what you did after you went over to Malaysia, examined all the processing equipment over there. What was your next step?
Well, Jim, what we did was contacted this company that had produced most of the jigging systems that we had seen over there, and just looked at what it would cost, number one, to have a unit built, and what kind of advantages we would have out of this unit. It had to be portable, we had to move it, but yet it had to be large enough to produce a living from. And there was reasons why we looked at this unit, because of the increased recovery potential over the conventional methods, Jim. That was one of the main things. But there was another thing that became a key issue, and that was the water use. And with this new type of unit, we did cut our water use back by almost 300%, which was a significant thing on the type of water quality we were dealing with. And I can't really say over the years it's been an easy chore to come up to compliance on some of these particular things that this industry's been straddled with. It's actually been very hard on this industry, and unfortunately there's been a lot of this industry has left the state for other areas. But I think the main problem that, again, since this particular use, water use, for this industry was stuck at drinking water, what basically had happened there, Jim, is they put a threshold before they had the technology to find out if it was achievable. And I've got to say that there's one thing that's very dramatic with that particular concept, is that if they are going to achieve that particular threshold, then there's going to have to be a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of science put into trying to upgrade this particular type of use for what we were used to. And the industry had they put millions of dollars in over the years, working with the agencies in time, effort, equipment, dedication, and the state finally decided that it had to get something done on this too and chip in, and then they had some innovative grants programs in the past, which has helped too. We are getting to the point, though, where we are producing actually no influent anymore, and because of that, it does change your outlook on how, you know, to perceive, to get out and perceive how this particular industry or livelihood is, you know, going to take place.
So they're approaching technology that will then indeed solve some of the major problems, environmental problems that we're facing.
Yeah, we've come a long way from the mom pop 15 years ago to what we are now.
We got a phone call for you, Dale, here. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. What's the cost of a jig like you're talking about?
Well, the jig unit, like what I bought, it was produced overseas. There wasn't really too many manufacturers here in the United States at that time. They are expensive, and it becomes expensive because it depends on what the dollar value is to, let's say, the Dutch guilder, and it was built in Holland. My unit was well over $1 million. But there are jigs available that aren't as sophisticated as mine that work just as well, that are cheap enough to where it's affordable for a small operation. You can pick them up for $10,000-$15,000.
We got time for one more call. Thank you for the call, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, you're on the air. You got 1 minute.
Thanks. Hi, Dale Ringstedt.
Well, hi. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad.
Dale, I understand over in the Salina country last year you had some trouble with black sand.
Well, we sure did. And
was that the unit or the excessive amount of black sand?
Well, excessive amount of black sand. The unit was so efficient that we were producing as much as several ton a day. And basically how we got around that particular problem, we're running a little short on time here, but we basically put in a inflow magnetic separator between the primary and secondary circuits, and it stripped it out very efficiently, and the jigs continued to work very well. But it gives you an idea of how efficient jigs are. We ended up with about 3,000 tons of magnetite in almost a pure form, so it was quite amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Is this Mark?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, that Dell's work out there is being presented in the plaster mining proceedings from last year's plaster conference. We're running a little short on time here, but...
more question. Are you going to be there next summer, Dell?
We might be moving farther north.
Mm. Okay. Just wondered about the black sand problem with the jigs.
Well, give me a call a little later, and I'll glad to talk to you.
Real good. Thank you a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
Mm, you bet, Jim. Bye.
We're running out of time here, Dell. I want to thank you for being on the show with me today, and it's always a pleasure.
Boy, Jim, this has really gone very quickly, and it's sure nice being here.
Thanks.
Just warm it up a little bit.
Yeah, just get warmed up. It's time to shut it down. Thanks for joining us here on Alaska. We'll be Steve Agbaba right here on Alaska Gold Trails. You're listening to KFAR Radio 660 on your radio dial here in our town, Fairbanks, Alaska.